Texas America and the world. This is Mark Dankoff coming to you live on the Republic Broadcasting Network from San Antonio, Texas on this Friday, August the 9th. My new studio equipment is up and ready to go, but I have it deactivated today because the Global Optics people are tearing up my neighborhood with all of their electronic cables in order to facilitate Google Internet as an option to Verizon and other options. At this particular point, I simply decided that going through the phone would ensure that no one would be bothering my electronic equipment just installed. So you will get me with my new electronic equipment next week. In the meantime, I am in a distant location from my studio operating through the old phone, and I hope that this transmission is a reasonably good one under the circumstances. You know, it's fascinating as one looks at all of the things going on in the world right now. I guess we will begin with two or three brief items and then kind of expand through the roadmap. The first thing is this. Obviously, the Ukrainians have begun an offensive in the Kursk region of Russia. We know basically how many men they've committed. We know where they are striking and their particular methods of striking. The Russians are heavily counterattacking with airstrikes and artillery. My prediction on this one, of course, which is not my own, but one that I have put together from a variety of the best sources, is that Russia will ultimately get these people out of the Kursk region and back into quote-unquote Ukraine. It will not be without losses, but the Ukrainian military is undertaking the same type of gamble that the Germans did little over 80 years ago in the Battle of Kursk in 1943. You go back and look at that particular battle in 1943. Ultimately, the old Soviet Union prevailed, of course, but the Germans tactically attacked the Kursk region as a means of trying to divert Soviet troops from an offensive through Donbass. And in this particular situation, over 80 years later, that's apparently a replay of what is going on. Only this time, the Ukrainians have a Jewish president who is illegitimate, not simply in terms of the coup d'etat of 2014 and the illegitimacy of every Ukrainian government since, but in this particular case, Volodymyr Zelensky is not allowing constitutional elections in his country. He has basically outlawed political opposition in all reality. He's persecuting the Russian Orthodox Church and Russian Orthodox priests. And in this particular juncture, the West supposedly would like to get rid of Zelensky. But what's the alternative going to be? If the alternative is Kirill Budanov, that's not a very good alternative in terms of exchanging one murderer for another. There are other alternatives to take over the Ukrainian government in terms of going back to the previous Jew, Poroshenko. But all of this, of course, is simply rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. The good news is, for those of us who believe that it is necessary that Russia win this war in order to begin to turn back the wings of the New World Order, Russia is doing all kinds of things that basically are to their own benefit in the central region of Donbass. The things that have happened that have been pro-Russian in Bakhmut and in Avdiivka, the way in which the Russians are getting ready for presumably some very interesting things to happen in the Zaporozhye region, all of that is being done in conjunction with their attempt to reestablish themselves more fully in the Kupiansk region and in the Sumy region, and to continue the airstrikes throughout the country that are slowly but surely decimating Ukrainian electrical power, Ukrainian military logistics installations, Ukrainian oil and ammo dumps, and of course airfields that would otherwise be used to store these F-16s that have made it in some numbers into this conflict in Ukraine. And there, of course, apparently the Romanians are playing a role in this in terms of hiding some of these F-16s in their country. There are other F-16s that are apparently on the way that are coming principally from the United States, but not exclusively so. And so we will get to see at some juncture in terms of a combat matchup how this American F-16 really stacks up against the Su-34s and 35s that the Russians have, these state-of-the-art fighters that they possess, where the Russians will have a very distinct advantage. They will have their pilots, piloting their fighters with full training and with no language barriers involved. If the F-16 pilots that are going to be used to oppose Russia over the skies of Ukraine and Donbass, if they have the same level of training as these people who are being forcibly conscripted into the Ukrainian infantry, that will be a complete mismatch in favor of Russia, which begs the question, will there be NATO and American pilots flying these F-16s? Keep an eye on that, especially as it has been reported that the French have lost a few hundred of their mercenaries in some of these latest activities that have involved Russian bombings, principally in the northern part of the line of conflict. And apparently there could have been some loss of French mercenary life in what is going on now in Kursk. How much longer this nonsense goes on remains to be seen. The Russians, I am confident, will get these Ukrainians out of the Kursk region of Russia. But at the same time, it is something that's going to have to be dealt with. There's another issue for Russia, and it gets into the other thing that we'll throw into the mix here, and that's Iran. Everyone is waiting for what is believed to be the assurance of an Iranian retaliation against Israel for the assassination of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran some days ago, who was there to attend the inauguration of the new president of Iran. This is not something, of course, that is going to be taken lightly in Tehran, especially since this murder took place on their soil. It involved a guest who was there to attend a presidential inauguration and who did attend that inauguration only to be assassinated on return to his particular living quarters. There are a variety of different stories as to how this assassination took place. Was it by a missile or was it by a pre-planted bomb that was detonated by remote control where the bomb was placed in the quarters of Ismail Haniyeh 2 months prior? I don't know how to assess that other than to assess the sources that these relatively different stories are coming from. But the bottom line is a very moderate leader of Hamas, by Hamas standards, who was based in Qatar and who had been appointed to engage in direct negotiations with Israel over the question of achieving a ceasefire in Gaza. He is assassinated by the Israelis, clearly, in order that he would be replaced by Mr. Sinwar, who is, of course, a Hamas leader who is absolutely on the Hamas political scale well to the right of Ismail Haniyeh in regard to negotiations of any kind with Israel. And at this particular juncture, that assassination was not only the latest Israeli crime, it took out someone who was in Iran for a presidential inauguration ceremony. And obviously Netanyahu in this regard is attempting to ensure that there is no ceasefire in Gaza, that negotiations come to a complete halt. And the other thing that Mr. Netanyahu is counting on is that there will be some type of way in which he will be able to draw the military of the United States into this conflict in Gaza and in Palestine and against Iran on the side of Israel, against Iran on the side of Israel, against Hezbollah, and potentially against Syria. So in this particular circumstance, it's a dangerous situation. Our old friend Mr. Austin from the American Defense Department has committed yet another aircraft carrier task force. In this case, it is the USS Theodore Roosevelt with the usual supplementary ships, destroyers and cruisers and so forth and so on. That particular aircraft carrier task force replaces the Eisenhower, which has moved yet to another location. So in this regard, this is where we stand as I speak. And this is a circumstance where perhaps the most notable thing that the Russians have done thus far is to ensure that the Iranians are going to be fully stocked with Russian S-400 anti-aircraft systems. So this is all matching up as a potentially world-threatening circumstance. But as of right now, as I'm speaking, I am unaware that the Iranians have, as of yet, launched anything. And this may well be to their advantage to wait. Certainly, Mr. Putin needs to finish the job in the Ukraine. And in that particular regard, if the Russians are able to finally finish off Zelensky once and for all and to possess the entirety of Ukraine, it would give the Russians the opportunity to be freed up for a more helpful, shall we say, supplemental involvement in the Middle East on behalf of Iran in the event that full-fledged war breaks out. So we'll keep an eye on all of this. But this is where we stand as we go through the agony of yet another obnoxious American presidential election system. Excuse me. Thinking about the events at the Paris Olympics in 2024, my post for VT Foreign Policy is listed in your roadmap. It has the title of Shocking Queer Jew Behind Paris 2024 parody of Jesus Christ. Take a look at that story, folks, because the implications of that are obvious. Mainstream media is not talking about that at all, especially since it basically supports the idea that the one world religion that it's okay to attack in Judaized countries is Christianity. In this regard, as we watch all of that develop, there's something I will say later in a brief reference to a book review of a book that is out there on the history of queers in the Olympics, going back many, many years. And the timing of the release of that book, of course, is in the time frame of the Paris 2024 Olympics. So it's quite obvious that major publishing houses and some folks in New York that are facilitating the distribution of this book to all the bookstores worldwide, including Barnes & Noble here in San Antonio, are in a less than subtle way trying to reinforce what it is that Macron and the French and the global elite were trying to achieve by these blasphemous demonstrations, these sexually perverted demonstrations in the opening ceremonies in Paris, which have one obvious target, implications of that particular circumstance yet to be seen. But this is where, again, we might talk about Jamie Raskin. He will come up again from Maryland's 8th Congressional District in a current news story. Keep in mind when we get to that point that this is the same Jamie Raskin who basically declared open warfare on Russia and the Russian Orthodox Church, because Raskin was pointing out that Russia and the Russian Orthodox Church stand as the major obstacle to the achievement of a global supremacy for LGBTQ everywhere on this planet, and for the destruction of a brand of Christianity that actually poses significant cultural and political and nation-state opposition to the larger game plan of the Jewish New World Order, of which Jamie Raskin from the 8th Congressional District in Maryland, the United States House of Representatives, is an obvious part of. We will come back to him quite shortly. Henry Sokolsky has one out there that is not an absolutely news story, but it's one that basically merits your time. It comes to us published from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, and it basically indicates that when the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists got together to war game a conflict between Israel and Iran, it ended, in terms of their own war games, in a nuclear conflict. Think about that one for a minute, folks, coming to us from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists and Henry Sokolsky. One wild card in all of this is whether or not we will see a situation where Pakistan might just sneak, or have they already sneaked, a nuclear weapon or two to the Iranians in the event of a preemptive attack by Israel on Iran. That's something that Netanyahu and company have hinted at. And obviously, they would be less than anxious to do it if it proved that Iran actually had the nuclear capability that in and of themselves they don't have and have not yet been trying to achieve, according to our own 16 intelligence agencies. But is that going to change in the wake of the end of JCPOA P5+1, which I had judged, frankly, to be one of Mr. Trump's most egregious mistakes in terms of terminating that treaty unilaterally? The other thing, as we continue to watch how all of this plays out, is that the Iranians certainly are in a situation where, even if they don't end up getting some kind of surveillance gift from the Pakistanis, well, by George, will Russia at some point intervene in this conflict if Israel and Netanyahu decide to employ the first use of nuclear weapons in the Middle East? And folks, going even further back, all of this pro-Israel crap that you have been listening to in our news media and reading about in our bookstores, there's a book out there called Target Tehran that I'll be saying something about before the end of the broadcast. That's a part of our book reviews today. It is the most insidious piece of pro-Israeli propaganda for an attack on Iran that has come out since Jerome Corsi's Israeli propaganda piece of some years ago entitled Atomic Iran, which was a book full of misrepresentations and out-and-out lies. That is not terribly different from what we now have here with this book entitled Target Tehran, where the connections of these authors to the Israeli intelligence community is not disguised at all. So this is the sort of thing that you're going to be hearing about and reading about from the pro-Israel, pro-Zionist side all the way up through these elections. And perhaps the most disturbing thing about it all is that Donald Trump, of course, is making his own pro-Zionist connections increasingly clear as his so-called campaign continues. Did you notice, and this is something else that's in your roadmap, did you notice that the person that was thought to be the impending choice of Kamala Harris as her vice presidential pick, it was supposed to be Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania. He didn't get selected. A relative lightweight by the name of Tim Walz, and I won't say too much more about him at this point, the governor of Minnesota, who has all kinds of questions to the pro-LGBTQ community, that Mr. Walz ends up being selected, even though in terms of electoral votes, Minnesota has nowhere near the significance of Pennsylvania. As it turns out, Josh Shapiro is not simply a dual citizen of Israel, but Josh Shapiro served in the Israeli Defense Forces on a volunteer basis. And this is, of course, a fact about Josh Shapiro that the military industrial complex and the AIPAC people who control American elections are trying to conceal. But there it is. You have a governor of Pennsylvania who undoubtedly would be Harris's running mate as we speak, except that news about his involvement on a volunteer basis with the Israeli Defense Forces would reveal for all time the extent to which the Israeli lobby and the Zionist government have their claws in both of the major political parties. And Trump made it very clear that he, Donald Trump, would be a far more pro-Zionist candidate across the board were he to win this 2024 election than Kamala Harris. The other thing for the Democratic Party that is very obvious, as you have a progressive wing of the Democratic Party, which in some cases has proven to be hostile to the monolithic pro-Israel point of view and perspective that has always been a part of the U.S. Democratic Party historically since the state was founded. The selection of Shapiro would have absolutely guaranteed a major schism in the Democratic Party in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention. Enough said about that convention, folks. You know what's coming with that. You'll hear a lot of garbage, and the Democrats will be running on the social issue of abortion they will be running on the whole question of LGBTQ acceptance and the acceptance of transgenders in the American educational process from the elementary grades onward, as well as the inclusion, full inclusion of even transgenders in the American military. The downside for the Democrats is they can't talk about this war in Ukraine that they've spent $175 billion on, along with some Republican assistance. They really can't give us an honest appraisal of what is going on in the Russian-Ukrainian war. Neither can they get out of the tight bind they are in terms of the fact that Joe Biden has already committed the United States to supporting Israel across the board, regardless of what it is that Mr. Netanyahu chooses to do, no matter how criminal it is. And in this regard, perhaps the most disturbing thing about this entire situation coming up in Chicago is that the Republican Party, with Donald Trump and with the strength of the Christian Zionist movement in the Republican Party nationally, as well as in the Texas Republican Party here in the state of Texas, it's an absolute lock as to the United States, in a pinch, supporting Netanyahu, no matter how genocidal and no matter how criminal his policies become. So the British couldn't make it in Palestine after they helped to facilitate the creation of the State of Israel. They turned that responsibility over to the United States. And since that time, we have not simply seen billions and billions of American dollars poured down that rat hole. We have not simply witnessed four major Middle Eastern wars, beginning with the first one in 1948. We're also seeing a situation now where Israel is becoming an increasing economic and political and military liability to the United States that is bringing us closer to a global conflict that is not in our interests. The interests of the Zionist state of Israel should not be seen as synonymous with the interests of the United States in national terms or the interests of the average American. And in this regard, Trump and the Democratic Party are both offering their own versions of how we support Israel. J.D. Vance, the Republican vice presidential choice, is a very, very handpicked person by the Republican Jewish Coalition. Even though Vance himself is not Jewish, he has all of the credentials in supporting Israel that the Republican Jewish Coalition and IPAC want. So in this particular case, it's a very, very sad day when we are approaching a potential ground zero in regard to an explosion in the Middle East and an explosion in Ukraine potentially and an explosion in the Pacific via our present policy toward China in that region vis-a-vis Taiwan. It all points up to a very, very ugly and very, very negative scene. Enough said. Well, let's see here. Here's one that our own RBN put on our news serve. It is a classic. If you haven't seen this, it's on your roadmap. The United States Army invested $11 million through the ROC as a means of recruiting kids into the United States Army. The campaign was not only not successful, they actually lost recruits after they spent the $11 million to try and get this thing stimulated, at least on a short-term basis. Folks, what does this mean? I have my own interpretation of what it means, and it is that the backdoor draft that has always been very successful for the American military, Ray McGovern talked about this some years ago, the ex-CIA analyst, and of course very much involved with the veterans in favor of political sanity or professional sanity or whatever VIP stands for here, veteran intelligence personnel for sanity. I think that that's the name of the acronym of the organization that Ray is with. But at any rate, he talked some years ago on YouTube, I don't know if it's still out there or not, but about the fact that a backdoor draft from the American military throughout the so-called no draft peacetime has always been the economy. Who signs up in disproportionate numbers to join the American military? White kids who are from towns of less than 10,000 in population. It seems to be their primary means of being able to get out of a small town and to have an opportunity to gain a college education through time and to do something. We have a disproportionate number of blacks that have been joining the American military over the course of the years that Ray McGovern has analyzed. Their economic opportunities are obviously enhanced by joining the Army. So be it. And then, of course, last but not least, are the percentages of Hispanic Americans joining the American military for the same reasons: economic opportunities, educational benefits, health care, and the ability to make more than the $2 an hour, literally, that you're going to make if you're a waiter or waitress at Denny's. The downside is this: if you get killed, none of that's worth it, is it? And in this particular case, an increasing number of people, I believe, are starting to figure out that there's a big game involved in this. Get your health care benefits, get your college educational tuition taken care of, but you might get your legs blown off in the meantime. This is not a necessarily appealing recruitment strategy as more and more people begin to figure out what's going on. There's another demographic and sociological concern that the various branches of the armed forces, including the Army, have not been able to figure out. You know what it is? A lot of the best Army and Air Force and Navy and Marine Corps recruits come from the areas south of the Mason-Dixon line. And you know what? A lot of these folks, especially the white heterosexual males, are not too anxious to be involved in an American military that has become aggressively LGBTQ. I know I wouldn't want to be in it. This doesn't represent the America I knew as a boy. And in this particular instance, not only is that the case, but these wars have nothing to do with the national interests of the United States. It has everything to do with the imposition of a Zionist-led world government. That's not something I'd want to fight and die for, right? Many of you listening to the show wouldn't want that either for yourselves or for your children. And if you truly believe that I'm right on this subject, you won't want your kids recruited. If you're young enough to be in the military, you're going to give that a second and third thought before you decide not to do it. The point is that the jig is up, that the old levers that used to be pressed and pulled with great effectiveness in regard to pulling youngsters into the military, that doesn't work as well anymore. They're not as impressed by the flyovers at NFL games. They're not as impressed by the honor guard appearances at NBA games and NHL games. They're not impressed by the stirring renditions of the national anthem at some of our Major League Baseball games anymore. Because underneath that is a gnawing feeling that this isn't the America that their parents knew, or their grandparents, or their great-grandparents knew. And I can affirm that that's absolutely the case. And when it comes to American kids dying for Netanyahu and his Zionist racist crackpots, I want no part of that. And I would tell any American young person that who wanted to talk to me on the subject. I certainly don't want a war that does not need to happen with Iran. I certainly do not want American kids dying in southern Lebanon. And I sure don't want American kids dying on behalf of our Jewish drag queen comedian in Kiev, Mr. Zelensky, who is an absolute opponent of the Russian Orthodox Church and traditional Christianity. The media is not telling our kids what these bums are doing to the Russian Orthodox Church illegitimately. In that country, the Ukrainian Orthodox Church is the canonical Orthodox Church of that country. Priests being put in jail, being beaten in many cases, properties being confiscated or burned down, individual believers being arrested by thugs. This is nothing that an American should be supporting, particularly with his or her life, particularly with his or her kids or grandkids being involved. One thing I didn't get a chance to do before airtime is to get a more complete update on the National Defense Authorization Act, because the House version reinstituted the draft. The version in the Senate, if it hasn't reinstituted it, is very close to doing so. And there's one thing in the House version that will be interesting to see if it survives House-Senate conference, if that hasn't been decided yet. And that's the drafting of women. Hear that out there, folks, drafting women. Do you believe in drafting women into the American Armed Forces, drafting them now? Many of you who come from traditional families, Christian families, want no part of that, as well as no part of having your sons potentially dying on behalf of the interests of global homo and LGBTQ and Zionist world government and central banking and BlackRock and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and all the rest of these people, including Lindsey Graham himself, right? You shouldn't want that. I'm sure if you understand what it is that I'm saying, you don't want that. And what we need to understand in this particular case, and I keep emphasizing it to my constituency, Putin is not our enemy. The Iranians are not our enemy. Hezbollah is not our enemy. President Assad of Syria is not our enemy. The Chinese are not our ultimate enemy. Things can be worked out there, both over the Taiwan issue and the South China Sea, except that somebody is profiting by these ongoing American instigations, these wars. Who is that someone? I think you all know who it is in disproportionate numbers, and we'll get back to that subject on yet another occasion. Let's see what else we've got in the roadmap here. Hold on here as I'm getting into my tiny little screen in my car. We have, yes, Scott Ritter and Tulsi Gabbard. Many of you know that Scott Ritter had his home raided by the FBI in New York a day or two ago. And in this particular case, it would seem that Mr. Ritter's selection for a national security raid on his house was the fact that he's been saying too many things and writing too many things for RT and other news sources that don't stack up with the bunk that you are being sold and have been sold by the vegetable still occupying the White House and by this global homo constituency in both of the major political parties, particularly in the Democratic Party. In this instance, Ritter is an avowed enemy of the mainstream media that is working with the deep state to sell our people on a Ukrainian war that is immoral, that should never have happened, that's cost us $175 billion already with the meter still running, and where the United States illegitimately overthrew the government of Ukraine in February of 2014 and has been installing puppets ever since as a prelude to yet another attempt to expand NATO, to continue encircling Vladimir Putin, to continuing using countries like Ukraine to stash American military assets, including biochemical assets and potentially nuclear assets. That's already happening in Romania, whereas the Russians understand it, and they are correct. The F-16 is nuclear capable, and the Russians know it, and it's sitting right there on their border. Let me ask this question. How many of you think that the United States government would sit by and allow a Russian-backed government or a Chinese-backed government to take over in Canada and Mexico? You know what would happen, and rightfully so. I don't want those kinds of puppet regimes on my border, although I freely admit I'd rather have Vladimir Putin in spades than that idiot Trudeau. And come to think of it, I'd rather have the Russians in Mexico anyway. But we won't go there. We'll just think about days of old. What did we do during the Cuban Missile Crisis? And quite rightfully so. This is the same situation, folks, that the Russians, a now non-communist Russia, post-Cold War Russia, Russian Orthodox Church culture renaissance Russia, that wants its nation-state sovereignty, is tired of all these NATO expansions which broke explicit promises made to the Russian leadership by George Herbert Walker Bush and Jim Baker that such activities would never take place. That's why we've gone from 12 members of NATO to 31 or 32, right? On this march toward the complete encirclement of Putin's Russia. For what reason? To bring them into the New World Order and into world government, to destroy the Russian Orthodox Church as an effective cultural opponent worldwide to LGBTQ, and to their rabid supporters like one Jamie Raskin from the 8th Congressional District of Maryland, who believes that that type of Christianity needs to be eradicated by American armed force. Really? We haven't heard Mr. Raskin interviewed on that subject on CNN recently, have we? Let's hope that in the so-called debates between Harris and Trump that some of that kind of information comes out. But you know what won't? The reason it won't is because the Democratic and Republican parties are basically funded by these Zio types. The neoconservatives are strongly represented in both of the major political parties. And therefore, when it comes to things involving Zionism, when it comes to things involving Judaism, when it comes to things involving central banking and stealing natural resources of other countries for multinational corporations, this is where you're going to get the same thing from either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party after this election is over. I will admit I'm going to have to vote for Trump simply because he's not Harris. Trump is arguably the lesser of two evils, but on this whole question of Zionism and Israel and ultimately going to war for these people, Donald Trump is not going to keep our kids from going into a conflict in the Middle East where they have no business being and where we have no business as a nation being and where we ought to stop letting the Zionist lobby in this country and the Netanyahu regime milk our sovereignty and milk our tax money sacrifice our kids with impunity. Enough said. But when it comes to Mr. Ritter, he's been talking too often about that sort of thing. So quite naturally, the FBI has to raid his house, suspecting that he might be a foreign agent who has violated the Foreign Agents Registration Act. What in the hell does anyone think that Israel has been doing since its inception as a state? What does anyone believe is a violation of the Foreign Agents Registration Act other than the existence of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee and other related Israeli PACs that are financing these elections on both sides of the aisle? And in the Republican Party, the party that also involves the Republican Jewish Coalition. These are the people. These are the people that ought to be fully registered in the Foreign Agents Registration Act. By the way, you go back into history, Michael Collins Piper makes an excellent case when he says that the insistence of the Kennedy brothers, that the American Zionist Council, the precursor of AIPAC, be registered as the lobbying entity of a foreign government, that is one of the reasons, and not the only one, for the Meyer-Lansky-David Ben-Gurion link to what happened in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963. Check out Michael Collins Piper's book, Final Judgment, if you've not read it. Laurent Gayano over at the UNTS Review admits that he has relied heavily on the Piper book for some of his own fine work on the question of Israel's linkage to all kinds of criminal actions directed at the United States. The Levon affair, the Kennedy assassination, the Promise affair, the NUMEC nuclear materials theft in Apollo, Pennsylvania, the USS Liberty attack in June 8th of 1967, the Pollard and Ben Ami spy cases, among many others, 9/11, and the list just goes on and on and on things where our chief ally in the Middle East and the only democracy in the Middle East, we are told, has been doing as much to destroy the nation-state sovereignty of the United States as they are attempting to destroy Palestinians and Gazans and Iranians and Syrians and Lebanese people on behalf of Globo Homo. This is the case, folks. Check it out. I don't think we need to be giving these people any more. We should never have been led down this garden path up to this point. But if you start looking at the Federal Election Commission contributions on each and one of these candidates you're thinking about voting for in the fall, guess what? I can almost guarantee the money trail for the particular people that you're going to research from the particular organizations that I have mentioned, which represent just the tip of the iceberg of how many of these pro-Israel public affairs, political affairs committees actually exist. Philip Drawley thinks there are about 30 of them, maybe more. Many of them we can't name. Many of them we don't know about, but they're out there and they're doing their work, and they are, on a guaranteed basis, never audited. Tulsi Gabbard, then. Tulsi Gabbard, here you have, at the same time that Ritter is having his house raided, Tulsi Gabbard, we are told by the UK Daily Mail and many other publications, has suddenly discovered that she's on a federal watch list, like when she flies in an airplane. Tulsi Gabbard, longtime Democrat Congresswoman of Hawaii, right? U.S. veteran. Tulsi Gabbard has simply written a book as to why she left the Democratic Party. The cover of that book says she left the Democratic Party for the sake of her own country. Tulsi Gabbard, by the way, issued a YouTube video not that long ago. Someone sent it to me, where she publicly proclaims that the Democratic Party has ideological and political animus toward Christians, that it is an anti-Christian bigotry party, which, of course, explains everything that the Democrats do when it comes to these left-wing social issues, as well as when it comes to opposing people worldwide that are against their globalist, pro-queer, anti-Christian agenda. And there you have, straight from the words of Jamie Raskin, and I put my own article on him for VT Foreign Policy right next to the current article on Mr. Raskin. There you can read him in his own words. What I have just stated is what Raskin stated, only I see this bigoted, unconstitutional, evil, and reprehensible. On the other hand, Raskin thinks that that's exactly what the Democratic Party needs to be doing on a national basis, as well as what it needs to be supporting globally. There is a situation going on in this country, folks. Don't let them get away with it. They've been running scot-free for so many years. Maybe we can't stop them, but it's going to be time that someone tries. Well, let's see. Kamala Harris. Here's another interesting American domestic story. A big video that we have posted for you of her speech in Atlanta recently. She pledges to confiscate so many American firearms by executive order. So Kamala Joe Stalin Harris is firmly on ground with this. You going to let her do that, folks? You going to let these people run that far afield of the U.S. Constitution? I guess if you allow them to conduct unconstitutional wars that have not been properly proclaimed in terms of American involvement by Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, maybe you're one of those folks out there that would also let these people confiscate any weapons you might have. Think of that, folks. This is a major stake in this election, and at least this is one area where Mr. Trump is a significant improvement on the gun issue. Over what you're going to get from these gun-grabbing Democrats who are still examining what gender they might be comprised of. By the way, Dr. Alan Sobrowski, the old U.S. Army War College chief, sent me something through VK in the last few days, and it's a meme, and it shows a young boy asking his mother, why is one of the American political parties making such a big deal out of the first American lady president, woman president, when they haven't even decided on what a woman is, right? Think about that one for a minute. Democratic Party, you know, some of these people think there are all kinds of multiple genders and shades of genders and this and that. Can we truly be sure that the first female president is all that significant a thing to Democrats who can't even agree on two genders. Think about that one. Okay, New York, Selwyn Duke, New York Attorney General, right? Her latest nefarious evil action has involved using Lawfare against the Vidaire immigration website. She's apparently been successful in that regard. Take a look on this whole issue of Lawfare and Vidaire as it relates to this radical left New York Attorney General, State Attorney General, that comes to us from the New American. And our Court Kirkwood of the New American also posts for us on the roadmap that if Trump wins, this is where Jamie Raskin comes in, folks, that Congress could choose to dispute a Trump victory. A civil war might follow. Jamie Raskin figures very prominently in that New American story on a post-election circumstance that our Court Kirkwood warns us is not necessarily that far-fetched. What are we going to do, folks? Are we going to fight or are we going to lie down? End of story. Keep an eye on it. LifeSite News has an ugly, ugly story on there out on Planned Parenthood. I've posted it for you. It's a sickening story on trading in body parts. Enough said. Read that one on your own time. Let's go down the further list of these things. Oh, yes, Palestine Chronicle has an excellent article on how Israel is using American tech giants in their war in Gaza and potentially in its future war with Iran and Syria and Hezbollah. Outstanding story. Take a look at that story. It is well worth your time. Dmitry Medvedev for Intel Slava. I posted a major quote from his statements on what Russian military strategy should be from here on out. I don't know whether Mr. Medvedev said this after the Ukrainian incursion into the Kursk region of Russia or not. It's a day or two, as near as I can tell, on either side of that Kursk incursion. But his philosophy, I think, is the correct one in regard to what the Russians need to be doing. And in this regard, take a look at the entirety of his statement as that has been published, because I affirm that all the way. This situation with Zelensky and the Ukrainians and global homo and LGBTQ and the New World Order and NATO interventionism and expansionism and all of this American money being cycled by American politicians into that country, in order, in some cases, to be embezzled by American politicians and the American armaments manufacturers, in addition to the Ukrainian political elite that we have been buying off ever since 2014. This particular case, there is one way that that can be stopped. And if it's stopped there, it can be stopped elsewhere. And that's by the kind of comprehensive victory that Mr. Medvedev advocates. Well worth your time to read that. I agree with everything he said. Well, let's see. British mobs. What is going on in Britain right now? We've got some of those articles for you on the roadmap in terms of the murder of three young British girls, beautiful little girls, on behalf of a real bastard. He's not only a real bastard, he has become a poster boy for the larger issue of illegal immigration and mass immigration in Britain that is being undertaken by all of these different demographic groups that, in my view, really should not belong there. But the British government is in clear support of this. And Keir Starmer, the current prime minister, recently elected prime minister of Britain from the Labour Party, is in full support of these activities in regard to suppressing these demonstrations and making criminals out of these British nationalists who are demanding that the government do something about all of these mass immigrations into their country and what it's doing to their neighborhoods and to their economies and to crime rate in different sectors of that country, right? Well, Starmer has indicated that he's going to sic the British police after these legitimately British people. whom he says will not be allowed to engage in anti-Islamic demonstrations in Britain. Can you think of one reason why Keir Starmer might be that rabid a globalist and that little a nationalist or populist in his own country? I'll give you 10 seconds. The answer is this. Starmer is Jewish, and he's married to a left-wing Jewess who has apparently the same globalist views that he has. Okay, maybe I didn't give you 10 seconds, but that's the answer. And I believe the story as to his actual background, which will fill in the blanks on a lot of the nonsense that he's been spouting in the international media and on British television since this latest series of events began. This context, I believe, explains all of that. But guess what? Unless you're on the Republic Broadcasting Network or writing for VT Foreign Policy or working for two or three of the other best alt-right outlets, you're not allowed to publish stuff like that or to talk about stuff like that. You see, that's hate speech. But what happened in Paris that was clearly directed at global traditional Christianity, East and West, targeting them with queer pornography and with a queering blasphemy of the Lord's Supper of Jesus Christ, that's okay. This is the message that's being sent, folks. And at some particular point, we are going to have to get out there in ways that we never have before. That maybe I'll talk about after the first Tuesday in November. Here we go. Ah, yes, here we are at the book reviews. I got some good book reviews for you, folks. I know we don't have but about 7 minutes left, and next week I'll be in my new studio, all hooked up properly, so I'll be doing this in a far smoother manner than I'm doing it here, but I didn't want to cancel on you. My roadmap, I think, is better than my broadcast today because of the technical limitations, but nonetheless, here's a book that you need to look at. But for gosh sakes, don't buy this thing, folks. Here it is. The Other Olympians, Fascism, Queerness, and the Making of Modern Sports by Michael Waters. Left-wing Jew, LGBTQ employee, I guess, of some library up in New York, research library. He has written this book that, in terms of the jacket of the book, has all these raving reviews in it. Read the review. If I tried to read the whole review here, we would be out of time, and I probably would barf before I got through it. But I also reviewed this for Google. Here is what I had to say about this book. I might possibly be the only negative out there, and I'm sure by now Google has undoubtedly stripped my review from their otherwise glowing praise from alleged readers of this thing, right? But here's what I said. The Other Olympians is a timely piece of shit. Released in the aftermath of Macron's Paris 2024 Olympic opening ceremonies, which commissioned a homosexual Jew to blaspheme Jesus Christ, his apostles, in the Last Supper, and a gala littered with LGBTQ actors and actresses, and the sewage of the Zion River, which publicly sickened swimming competitors. A survey of non-Western social media and print publications noted correctly that this was clearly a statement on Christianity in Paris from a post-Christian globalist elite in a Western world that is in cataclysmic decline morally, spiritually, economically, and militarily, soon to be eclipsed by a Eurasian movement led by Russia and China, attracting countries in every region of the globe as an alternative to the death of the West. The timing of the release of the Other Olympians indicates the publisher now joins Macron and the IOC in the obvious targeting of traditional Christianity, with the identity of the perpetrators not well concealed. That's the book review, first one. The next one is American Prometheus, The Triumph and Tragedy of J. Robert Oppenheimer by Kai Bird and Martin J. Sherwin. This is an excellent work, folks, in many respects. It's voluminous, it's academic, terrific bibliography, tremendous detail on Oppenheimer coming from these people. I don't want to engage in an ad hominem attack on this book. It is worth your time to read the book and to evaluate its contents very, very carefully. The glaring omission of this book, however, is that it does not talk about the real reason why Oppenheimer was subjected to an Atomic Energy Commission security review by one Louis Strauss. Louis Strauss, the then head of the AEC. We are led to believe, or the impression is created by this American Prometheus volume on J. Robert Oppenheimer, that this was just a red herring. This was McCarthyism. This was paranoia at its worst. When the real fact of the matter is, we can now prove through the release of the Venona Papers that Oppenheimer was sharing American atomic and nuclear secrets with the Soviet Union. This is a fact. It is not presupposition. It is a fact which is not mentioned in this book or in the movie on Oppenheimer's life released in more recent times based upon this book. That is the Achilles heel of American Prometheus and what it depicts of the life of J. Robert Oppenheimer. It's an excellent book, but folks, that is a glaring omission. Get a hold of the Venona Papers, the book, definitive book in all likelihood, on the release of those papers by the Russian intelligence after the end of the Cold War, with all kinds of information on the KGB and its activities throughout the Cold War. There you will read in this book by Herbert Romerstein and by Eric Brindell that among many things that are revealed in the Venona Papers is that J. Robert Oppenheimer was serving at one point as a Soviet spy. That doesn't appear in American Prometheus. It doesn't appear in the movie on Oppenheimer based upon that book. It doesn't totally invalidate the book, but it is sure the glaring and deliberate, convenient omission of a fact of life and a fact of history that provides a look at Oppenheimer that is anything but positive. Let's...
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.